support more talk, you will never be the same.
And for the full catastrophe, he didn't mean it was all bad.
Oh, that I wasn't as a way of saying, don't play with
me! I invite you to the dance. To the dance with the Lord of the dance.
God didn't call America to do what she's doing in the world.
Hello, everybody. You may have noticed, if you're part of our community at least, that Back to Basics and most of our other content have been down for a couple of weeks now. If you've been in our community on Discord, you've heard me explain it. It has to do largely with our scheduling. Both me and Courtney and a couple of other people, we've all had sick kids. It all kind of happened at the same time. And so we ran out our backup list of pre-recorded episodes and just did not have time to make more. So it's going to be another week or so before we have time to really get back in the swing of things. So in the meantime, I wanted to take a minute and bring something else to you guys in this wonderful space we have in between worship services. Now, again, on our Discord server, we've been talking about some of this stuff already. So if you're not on the server with us yet, you probably don't know what I'm talking about. But one of the things that I shared with our community earlier in this week has been some of the work I've been doing in my doctoral studies on some of the more interesting dynamics of sermon writing. And for one of these classes, I was charged with the creating of a small 5 to 7 minute sermon on justice. And we were talking about that in the community because I like to share this stuff with you guys. And you know what? It came to my attention that some of you might be interested in actually hearing this sermon than rather hearing me talk about it. So with that in mind, I have decided to take a minute and bring that word to you guys as well, because even though it wasn't written originally for our community, it was written very much with y'all in mind. And I do want to share that with you. So without any further ado, we're going to take a little time and spend a few brief minutes with the Word of God in this way today. Now, this sermon, despite being only like a short 5 to 7 minute little blurb, actually has two full scripture readings attached to them. And I'm going to read them both to you because I want them to be on your mind as we go through this. And our first reading, bit of a spicy one, comes from the book of Amos, chapter 5, verses 18 to 24. I'll try to have links for these down in the descriptions for you guys as well. Book of Amos 5, 18, 24 reads as follows. Woe to you who desire the day of the Lord. Why do you want the day of the Lord? It is darkness, not light, as if someone fled from a lion and was met by a bear, or went into the house and rested a hand against the wall and was bitten by a snake. Is not the day of the Lord darkness, not light, and gloom with no brightness in it? I despise your festivals, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them, and the offerings of well-being of your fatted animals I will not look upon. Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the melody of your harps, but let justice roll down like water and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Say what you will, Amos knew how to have a word. Our second passage that we're going to be working out of comes from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 6, verses 1 to 6, and it tells a story that ought to be familiar to some of us, the rejection of Jesus at Nazareth. He left that place and came to his hometown, and his disciples followed him. On the Sabbath, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were astounded. They said, "Where did this man get all this? What is this wisdom that's been given to him? What deeds of power are being done by his hands? Is this not the carpenter, the son of Mary, and brother of James and Joseph and Judas and Simon, and are not his sisters right here with us?" And they took offense at it. Then Jesus said to them, "Prophets are not without honor except in their hometown and among their own kin and in their own house." And he could do no deed of power there, except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and cured them. And he was amazed at their unbelief. Now, as we start into this, I'll give a little advance word that some of the experiences I'm going to describe in here may be hauntingly, painfully, or even triggeringly familiar to some of you. So keep an eye out for that. That also being said, if you are not someone who comes from a background in an oppressed community, particularly in the LGBTQIA community, this is something you should hear. This involves experiences that you don't necessarily have a connection with, and I think you ought to do that. So now I would like to invite you for a moment to a place of imagination. I want to ask you to imagine for a moment, if you will, that you are a child, that you've been born into a fairly normal, if somewhat conservative, American family. Your parents, they tell you often how much they love you, tell you stories about how excited they were when they first found out that you were going to be born. You grow up hearing all of these loving and lovely anecdotes about things like the first ultrasound, the baby shower, the day they found out whether you were going to be a girl or a boy, and the excitement your parents had buying baby clothes and decorating the nursery to match this long-expected bundle of joy. But as childhood gives way to adolescence and eventual teenagerhood, there are two things you come to realize with abundant certainty. One, your parents absolutely adore who you are. And two, terrible things will happen to you if anyone, especially your parents, were to find out who you actually are in the deepest corners of your heart. So you live your life in fear, learning how to speak, how to act, how to dress, and how to exist with deliberate care and meticulous attention to detail, because you have been told all your life that this unchangeable, unalterable piece of who you are is a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad monster that must be shunned and excised on sight. Every day, just getting out of bed brings you the same level of mental and physical stress and exhaustion that you might expect from a spy hiding deep in enemy territory, because you know that even the slightest indication of who and what you are could lead to you being discovered, exposed, outed. It's exhausting. It's exhausting living your life like that. So one day you decide you just can't take it anymore. And you're gonna do it. You're gonna sit down with your parents and finally tell them the truth. So you go into this conversation and you go in praying that your parents will somehow manage to hold on to the love that ran like white hot current through every story they told you growing up, praying that at the very least they won't turn away from you or cast you aside. But the truth is that what you're really wildly, desperately hoping for isn't just for your parents to say, "Yeah, it's okay, we still love you." It's for them to smile and say to you, "Well, obviously, we already knew that. I mean, yeah, we love you. Obviously, we love you, but we see you. We know you. We see you for who you are." Man, that's the dream, right? Like, that's the dream. But the hard truth is that the answer that kids get in that moment usually isn't anything like that. No, usually the answer most kids get is something more like, "Why can't you go back to just being how you were? You don't have to be like this. I miss my child. This isn't who you really are." And what makes these words so terrible, so painful, so brutal that those who hear them commit suicide at a rate 4 times higher than the rest of us isn't that they're intentionally cruel, crafted with intent to wound in body, mind, or spirit. It's the fact that this sudden outpouring of grief and denial shows for certainty that your parents are totally full of all that love you knew they had, but your beautiful, honest act of self-revelation has laid bare the damning and haunting fact that the love they had is not now, nor was it ever actually for you. It was for a child who never really existed in the first place. An illusion, a mirage, shattered by the presence of your true and authentic self. But as important as this is, the real elephant in a room full of practicing Christians, the real thing we're actually thinking about isn't this, it's church decline. I mean, never mind the fear of the vulnerable and the afraid, the thing that we in professional and institutional Christian ministry are all really terrified of, the thing that we're really losing sleep over is church decline. Even before COVID happened, so many of us were starting to feel that pressure, and it's even worse now that we can see that a lot of those who left, they're not coming back. The church is getting smaller, budgets are shrinking, programs are being cut, and we're starting to wonder just how long it's going to be before we become the next footnote statistic in a Gallup poll. We start looking towards the church at that first Pentecost, offended and confused, astounded by the deeds of power being done by Christ in that time and place, wondering why the wisdom of church growth was given to them, but not to us. So we crank up the noise of our songs, tune up the melodies of our harps, plan festival after festival and solemn assembly after solemn assembly, trying desperately to connect the Messiah we thought we had, grieving the absence of great King Jesus, and wondering just why it is that it seems that he can do no deeds of power here in this place. The eyes of our hearts, they rest on empty pews. On our heads, they turn upward in despondent prayers. We cry out to God, say, why can't things just go back to how they used to be? It doesn't have to be like this. I miss my church. This isn't who we really are. Jesus could do no deeds of power in his hometown because the people's expectations for Joseph's woodworking boy kept them from seeing the Messiah come to set them free. I often wonder if all the cultural expectations of a white American Christian Messiah aren't doing much the same to us, keeping us from seeing the wild-eyed, long-haired, dark-skinned agent of God's creative love come to set us free from the pressures of all that has come before, free from our complacent submission to capital and wealth, and free from a world in which there is about one church building for every two homeless people in the country, but we somehow still have homeless people in the country. Who might we be if instead of mourning our long-expected Jesus, we embraced the risen Christ who has been right here with us this whole time, sitting in the locked room beside us, waiting to be fully and completely seen.